Blog Talk Radio.
Today is May 1st. It's the day that in a lot of countries, workers' rights are celebrated and workers are on it. And the way Americans are on it is a day at work.
Yeah, a day at work. Yeah, really. Like,
or work
cares?
Overtime.
Who cares,
to just,
right? Yeah.
Just hit yourself to the plow and continue on.
Well,
but there are places in the world where things are much worse, and Leo's with us here.
One of the worst things that's happened in the recent last few days, the Bangladeshi collapse of the horrible condition that these people have to work in. And Bangladesh, 6 arrested in building collapse, death toll 377 people. Hundreds are missing.
The death toll as of this morning stands at 377 people, and hundreds remain missing, reports the New York Times. CNN reports that authorities have arrested 6 people. 3 factory owners, 2 government engineers, and the owner of the building, Sohel Rana, a local level leader of the ruling Awal Mill League, who was caught as he tried to flee the country. I bet he was trying to flee.
I'll bet.
More than 300 workers now have been confirmed dead from Wednesday's building collapse in Bangladesh. Some 2,200 survivors have been pulled from the rooms that was being called one of the worst manufacturing disasters in history. More than 3,000 garment workers were on the job when upper building floors pancaked on top of each other. Prime Minister Sheikh Hasina has ordered the arrest of the building's owner, Mohammed Sohel Rana, a local leader of the ruling Awami League's Youth Front, who told factory operators the building was safe. Hasina also has ordered the arrest of 5 garment factory owners. So let's see.
I was very glad to hear that and read that. And at least they're doing something for these people.
Let's see. You can show, you can show solidarity with garment workers in Bangladesh by going to Labor Start to send your message demanding that the Bangladeshi government take urgent action to guarantee freedom of association and improve building and fire safety and the minimum wage for more than 3 million garment workers in Bangladesh. More than 300 workers, as they said, now have been confirmed dead. Cracks in the multi-history building located in Savar, just outside the capital, because I've read that on the other page. Cracks in the multi-building located in the Safar, just outside the capital, Dhaka, were reported in the local media after they appeared on Tuesday. Although workers in the retail shops on the building's first floor were told to stay home on Wednesday, operators of the garment factories in the building's top floors ordered employees to report to work. According to the Bangladesh Daily Star, video shot before the collapse shows the cracks in the walls with some attempts at repair. The video also shows columns missing chunks of concrete. Bangladesh's BBB News 24 reports workers say factory owners forced them to work on Wednesday, including Akima, a garment worker. "I did not want to go to the factory since the crack appeared yesterday, Wednesday," she said. "But the factory's office forced us into the building in the morning," Bangladesh Information Minister Hansul Haq Inu told the press that the collapse was not an accident. It was a killing accident.
Killing incident.
The AFL-CIO Solidarity Center has called on the Bangladesh government to enforce its labor and building codes on multinational companies that source from the country, to prioritize health and safety conditions in factories and or both, to respect the rights of workers, and recognize that the only way Bangladesh will have safe factories is if the workers have a voice on the job. Human Rights Watch noted to the Associated Press that none of the factories at Rana Plaza was unionized, and that they had been, and that they had been, workers would have been in better position to refuse to enter the building Wednesday. And people were terrified they'd lose their work. Media reports describe Dhaka and Savar as chaotic, with thousands of garment workers protesting the collapse and demanding arrest and punishment of those responsible for the tragedy, and families of missing workers pressing to get access to the rooms to find their loved ones. The building collapse took place 5 months after a fire killed 112 garment workers at the Turin fashion factory. Since then, there have been at least 41 fire incidents at Bangladesh garment factories that have killed 9 workers and injured more than 660 others, according to data completed by the Solidarity Center. Bangladesh's apparel industry is the country's largest source of export revenue. 78% of the country's $23 billion in export revenue in 2011. Yet garment workers are paid $37 a month, the lowest in the world, as factories seek to minimize costs to meet the price demands of the global apparel brands. Workers are often prevented from forming unions, and these vulnerable and impoverished workers cannot fight alone for their rights. A New York Times editorial yesterday concisely summed up the solution to Bangladesh's ongoing workplace tragedies, writing that the government must enact meaningful changes for the country's 3.5 million garment workers, many of whom are women. The most essential change is to enforce Bangladeshi labor laws and safety standards, which theoretically provide protection, but are really honored. The law allows workers to form unions and bargain with management on wages and working conditions, but the government has not defended those rights, despite promises to do so, to international agencies in the United States.
We've listened to other reports, and it turns out that many of the politicians of Bangladesh also own these buildings and these companies.
Local politicians.
Yeah, it is really, really a problem.
So nobody enforces any of the laws because they're all in bed with the corporation.
Yeah.
And England is the biggest outsourcer of the garment industry, of their garment industry. And those clothes were going to England.
Here's a pet peeve of mine, which is help save the U.S. Postal Service. God, people,
Do you care about keeping post offices open, ensuring Saturday delivery for years to come, and stopping proposals to lay off postal workers? Then you could sign the petition to support a bill that would end the requirement that the U.S. Postal Service pre-fund 75 years of retiree health care benefits.
That's absurd. Mm-hmm. The whole thing is absurd. They don't allow that to any other company in the world.
Representative Peter DeFazio, Democrat of Oregon, filed legislation to end this requirement. The legislation that forces the requirement passed by Congress in 2006 is unprecedented, as no other private or public entity has to meet such a standard. The requirement is the key factor driving Postal Service deficits and defaults, and has led to proposals to end Saturday service, close rural post offices, and lay off all postal workers. Think Progress reports that the U.S. Dice Post Office would have a $1.5 billion surplus if it wasn't for the pre-funding rule set by the Republican majority in Congress. Senator Bernie Sanders, independent of Vermont, introduced companion legislation in the Senate.
It says, read more about the letter to carriers, truth behind the Postal Service finances. We're going to do that because the whole thing is absurd. I mean, it's just...
Well, they want to privatize, and that's why the government...
Of course they do.
They have buddies who want to have that business.
Sure they do. This is...
That's just a graphic. That's no good.
I thought this was going to go out to something, but it didn't. So, anyway, folks, that's great. Sorry. I am just...
Why don't you put play some music while you're trying to find what you need. Play some music while you're trying to find what you need, Leo.
Okay. Let me go to a quick little break and we'll be back in a second.
For music break, thank you.
Giving 11 11 million people illegal immigrants status. Okay, is this wrong? It's wrong. I don't care what the hell is done.
I think your position is wrong.
You agree with allowing 11 million people to become citizens.
People who...
Amnesty, you know, just let them go.
You know how I feel, Leo.
I don't know how you feel, Lila, because it makes no sense that you could allow 11 to 20 million people free amnesty in this country.
That's your opinion. Doesn't mean that you're right.
Just totally wrong.
Just because that's your opinion... You don't have to make
well,
me feel...
Well, explain your opinion
I
here.
I said to you...
Why would you allow 20 million
you're not
people
listening.
To...
You don't listen. You just talk. You don't listen.
Why?
When a person is brought here as a child, through no fault of their own, they've gone to American schools, and they, you
boy,
get to deport
like
them...
being a fiddle, I tell you.
Well, I'm sorry. That's just the way it is, and these people are already here working. If they've broken the law and they're criminals, I don't think they should be allowed
they've broken
to
the law. Number one, they're illegal. Number two,
I can't argue with you. They're already working.
They're illegal. Number five,
this is a illegal. This is a point we'll never agree on.
I don't think so because, I mean, what? Why? No other country in the world allows this kind of stuff. No other country in the world.
Let's look up the economy. I think that might be interesting.
Let's go to. And nothing about the economy that's going to help us here. You know, allowing 20 million illegal immigrants.
I will agree and disagree.
It's not going to happen.
Made in America, manufacturing rival. The Washington Post today published a special section. Let me read that. That's interesting. In print and on the web about what some say is a resurgence of made in America manufacturing. In the section's anchor piece, Brad Plumer writes that some U.S. firms have reshored their manufacturing operation in the United States and that even some Chinese companies have located new plants here. He cites a narrowing wage gap between U.S. workers and foreign counterparts, lower energy and transportation costs, and automation as key drivers in the moving of the manufacturing to the United States. Well, that's good. I hope that's true. But he also notes there is a disagreement between economists and policymakers. Can you move that up?
I can.
Agreements and policymakers that the reports of corporations establishing new U.S. manufacturing operations are anecdotal and just blips on the economic radar screen or evidence of a real resurgence. Scott Paul, the president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing, tells Plumber, I think it's fair to say this hasn't all registered in the data just yet, but if we're starting to lay the groundwork, we will start to see a real effect 3 to 10 years from now. I hope that's true. I hope that'll give so many more jobs to Americans, especially manufacturing jobs, which would be wonderful because we have a real lack of those.
Yeah, this is nothing. This is not even an article. Excuse me, I'm sorry.
Pollen.
There's nothing.
Don't go to there. You cross the whole thing out.
What do you mean? Oh, sorry, folks. Oh, God. Excuse me. Excuse me. I'm sorry.
So that would be great if Americans have more opportunity to apply for more jobs and... more jobs, more manufacturing jobs.
But with 20 million illegal aliens, Americans are out of the loop. They're totally out of the loop.
How about political action legislation?
Excuse me. I'm sorry. There's something in the air. Oh, yeah. Well, anyway. So,
millennium.
What?
Will millennials come back to labor? As we approach, what's that exactly? As we approach...
Jeez, I'm sorry. I have something
in the air.
Oh.
The Washington...
Oh, I got gives us balance.
Students at the University of Wisconsin-Madison staged a sit-in in Chancellor David Ward's office Tuesday to demand that the school cut ties with Palermo's Pizza because of an ongoing strike at the pizza company based on allegations of attacks on workers' rights. A dozen students participated in the sit-in before voluntarily leaving at police request. One student, Maxwell Love, refused to leave and was arrested on charges of criminal trespassing and resisting arrest. Hundreds of the supporters of the sit-in rallied outside, and a number of them blockaded a police van when Love was arrested. As we approach International Workers' Day, also known as May Day, it's not hard to wonder about the future of the labor movement, whether or not young people in the United States will wake up and see that joining labor unions could be part of the solution to the nation's 22.9% youth unemployment rate. Let's see what they say, read a little bit more about that. Somewhere between the hate propaganda and promoting the dangers of joining labor unions, including bringing us a weekend and the 40-hour week, and outsourcing millions of jobs overseas, the millennial generation has been raised to turn our backs on labor and pray for a job at Google, where we might be able to get fair working standards like a free bowl of Captain Crunch or a bike share program. Let's face it, the average millennial will have 7 jobs before they turn 26, if they can find a job at all. Perhaps the reason why millennials switch jobs so frequently is because we are unhappy with the benefits, treatment, and lack of respect due to our age in the workplace. Something needs to change, and it could start with a massive movement of currently employed young people joining labor unions. Imagine a young teacher joining the AFT, that's the American Federation of Teachers, and increasing their income to pay off their $22,000 student loan debt, or a young garbage woman joining AFME and earning more paid vacation days to spend time with family or friends. If our generation stands together and demands fair working practices, would we not only be setting ourselves up for the future economic success, but would be setting up success for future generations? Let's not get it twisted. Labor needs us as much as we need them. As the labor movement clings to their aging membership, they know they have a lot to change. They just caught up with the rest of us by utilizing technology to organize our generation, and we definitely need to see more people of color, women, low-income folks, lesbians, gays, bisexuals, transgender, and queer people as the face of some of the most powerful unions. But we have a choice: continue being sad about being underemployed or straight up hating our jobs, or we can change the status quo. What if our generation redefines what it means to have a union job? What if labor took on more progressive issues that millennials care about? What if we encourage our colleagues to sign the cards and be part of an institution that has power in the State House and the White House? What if we change the face of labor? I believe that the millennial generation will change the economic crisis, not Mama and Pop-Pop, who have been in Congress since before TV dinners were invented. Transformation of the economy starts with the value of the worker, and the value of the worker starts with our generation joining a union. Well, I hope they listen to that and do it. Find another article.
Sorry.
Okay.
Sorry, folks. I had a horrible hay fever attack here.
I think we could also maybe go to our other site. I think we'll find some more.
Well, I want to thank everybody, and
But we might just read this last one. I like this. Austin taxi drivers affiliate with the AFCIL and gain a voice on the job. It's been a good few years for taxi drivers gaining a voice on the job. Today in Austin, Texas, the National Taxi Workers Alliance granted its first local chapter charter since it joined the AFL-CIO. The Austin Taxi Drivers founded the Taxi Drivers Association of Austin to organize and collectively address drivers' concerns from economic hardship to harassment and physical safety on the job. The TDAA says drivers work up to 15 hours per day, 7 days a week, and yet earn less than minimum wage on many days and have no job security. While income is tightly regulated by the city through the meter, owners regularly increase lease fees charged to drivers that eat up much of their earnings. Today at a ceremony welcoming the chapter, Becky Moeller, president of the Texas AFL-CIO, told KUT News the affiliation will allow drivers to speak with one voice, whereas before they would speak and we would not assist them. And now they're actually part of organized labor, and we're excited about that. So they're getting a lot of support.
That's great.
Which is good. Now we'll go to our other site. We'll get off this, right?
Trust me, leaves you nowhere.
Okay.
And
country will, if you knew what was coming, first vaccine announced for autism. That's interesting. Some health news.
Yeah, this Zedengardner guy is, you know.
Waking Times. You knew what was coming. The first vaccine announced for autism. So they had to create it.
With something,
So now they have a vaccine to prevent it.
Since
right?
they caused it, they have to find a way to prevent it.
The first, this is by Dave Mihaljevic.
It's Awakening Times.
The Waking, Prevent Disease Waking Times. The first ever vaccine created by the University of Guelph researches to control autistic symptoms is here. The medical propaganda matrix has once again come full circle with their patented problem-reaction solution. Although there is no study which directly links vaccines as the cause of autism, there have been hundreds of others with correlations. Even if scientists are dismissive of the causation front, why do they continue to explore methods which are misinformed, misguided, and completely ineffective? Constipation and diarrhea are common in autistic patients, so what's the solution? A vaccine, of course. Physicians bombard autistic children with antibiotics for bacteria, Colostrum bolteae, that has been shown in overabundance in the intestinal tract of autistic children suffering from gastric intestinal ailments. Some research has shown that an autism-associated neurotoxin produced by Clostridium botulinum may play a role in triggering late-onset autism in some individuals. The study by Brittany Picanot and Guelph University chemistry professor Mario Monterio appears this month in the journal Vaccine. They developed a carbohydrate-based vaccine against the bacteria. What is particularly interesting about this vaccine is that researchers know practically nothing about why autistic children have higher concentrations of the bacteria or whether or not it specifically causes the range of gastrointestinal distress these children experience. Little is known about the factors that predispose autistic children to C. botulae, said Monterio. Although most infections are handled by some antibiotics, he said a vaccine would improve current treatment. Diet and prescription medication has long been suspected as a cause for the increase of that bacteria. However, researchers seem to glance over the data in favor of vaccine development. They seem to glance over the data. This is the first vaccine developed to control constipation and diarrhea caused by this bacteria, and perhaps control autism-related symptoms associated with this microbe. The U.S. Center for Disease Control estimates there are now 1 in 88 children in the United States who have autism spectrum disorder. Boys are almost 5 times more likely to be autistic than girls, with 1 in 54 boys now identified. This represents almost 100% increase since the 1000% increase since the 1980s. That's amazing.
Yeah.
There have never been any long-term double-blind studies for any vaccine to prove that they are not responsible for the development of autism in children. The vaccine testing, therefore, is on the general population. Although many scientists have focused on vaccines, environmental factors, genetics, and others have applied their research to the human gut. Some researchers believe toxins and/or metabolites produced by gut bacteria, including the C. botulae, may be associated with the symptoms and severity of autism, especially regressive autism. The new anti-C. botulae vaccine supposedly targets... Supposedly targets the specific complex polysaccharides or carbohydrates on the surface of the bug. There is currently no evidence in any trials that the vaccine has effectiveness to curb symptoms of autism or GI distress. The vaccine might take more than 10 years to work through preclinical and human trials, and it may take even longer before a drug is ready to market. But this is a significant first step in the design of a multivalent vaccine against several autism-related gut bacteria, he said.
Why additional vaccines are not the answer? The reason vaccines will never address the underlying problems related to autism and GI distress is due to the reaction of specific pollutants of which autistic children experience negative symptoms. The highest probable cause for C. bultae abundance is due to an imbalance of the bacterial populations in the gut, which is attempting to balance the stress from these pollutants.
Many parents have claimed a high degree of success from dietary strategies to reduce the symptoms of autism spectrum disorder. According to researchers from Penn State, a gluten-free, casein-free diet may lead to improvement in behavior and psychological symptoms in children diagnosed with autistic spectrum disorder.
See, it all leads back to gluten again, you know, this damn GMOs.
Research has shown that children with autism spectrum disorder commonly have GI symptoms, said Christine Pensey, medical student at Penn State Medical College. Notably, a greater proportion of our study population reported GI and allergy symptoms that what is seen in the general than what is seen in the general pediatric population. Some experts have suggested that gluten and casein-derived peptides cause an immune response in children with autism spectrum disorder, and others have proposed that the peptides could trigger GI symptoms and behavior problems. Gluten and casein seem to be the most immunoreactive. A child's skin and blood tests for gluten and casein allergies can be negative, but the child can still have a localized immune response in the gut that can lead to behavioral and psychological symptoms. When you add that in with autism, you can get an exacerbation of effects. Excuse me, Dad. I really tongue-tied on that. If parents are going to try a gluten-free, casein-free diet with their children, they really need to stick to it in order to receive the possible benefits, she said.
Detoxification and immune systems. I'm going to read the rest of this. It's just a short paragraph or two, but it's important to note. In the body of an autistic individual, portions of detoxification system as well as specific metabolic processes become dysfunctional, leading to a diminished ability to completely break down certain foods. When analyzed by sophisticated scientific methods, a portion of these partially digested substances are shown to resemble morphine. Yes, morphine. These neurotoxins, or opiate substances, leak out of the digestive tract into the bloodstream and attack the brain nervous system, producing the symptoms and complications associated with autism. Wow, isn't that amazing, huh? Diminished levels of critical substances such as glutathione, resulting in oxidative stress, keeps this process in place. And recovery of autism requires stop of the production of neurotoxins or opiate substances.
Reduce or eliminate oxidative stress.
Heal the nervous system.
In October of 2001, a team of clinicians and researchers led by William Walsh, Ph.D., then at Pfeiffer Treatment Center, affiliated with the Health Research Institute, now of Warrenville, Illinois, made available a scientific study entitled Methylthionine and Autism. Methylthionine is a protein that is critical to the process of detoxification of harmful substances, particularly heavy metals and toxic chemicals. The paper describes a study of 503 patients on the autism spectrum versus age matches non-autistic patients. The conclusion of the study was that most autistic patients exhibit evidence of methylthionine dysfunction, and this dysfunction may be a universal characteristic of autism spectrum disorder. Translation: the detox system of autistics are impaired.
Go ahead.
Walsh also concluded that MT dysfunction in autism may result from the intersection of two factors, a genetic defect involving marginal or defective MT functioning, followed by an environmental insult during early development, which disables MT. According to Walsh's paper, once MT becomes compromised, that's the myothionine dysfunction, the myothionin, and then it becomes a dysfunction. A host of other dysfunctions occur, including detoxification of mercury and other toxic metals, development and functioning of the immune system, development and pairing of brain neurons, regulation of zinc and copper levels in the blood, prevention of yeast overgrowth in the intestines, production of enzymes that break down casein and gluten, response to intestinal inflammation, production of stomach acid, taste and texture discrimination of tongue epithelia, I'm not sure what that means, hippocampus function and behavior control, and development of emotional memory. Well, that's true. They don't.
This article goes on quite a ways, but
that's kind of
it's like, whoa, you know? That's what
those poor kids.
Yeah, I mean, but it all draws back to gluten, you know,
it,
and wheat products
that
they're eating, you know. Yeah, it's really something else to realize that your diet, that what we're eating is killing us. What you do speaks loudly that I cannot hear what you say.
No, what you do speaks so loudly that I cannot hear what you say.
Ralph Waldo Emerson. He's right.
Yeah, he had a lot of good sayings.
Yeah. That seems to go pretty long here. It really gives up quite phosphorus because it doesn't photograph well. Oh, God, this is so difficult. This goddamn war in Palestine, I tell you, oh, God. Israel gives up white phosphorus because it does not photograph well. So the IDF is looking for a replacement for white phosphorus bombs. A senior officer in the ground forces explained, as we learned during CAS lead, white phosphorus doesn't photograph well. So we are reducing the supply, and we will not purchase beyond what we already have. It doesn't photograph well. In all honesty, the man is right. The item caught me by surprise, and the IDF, Israeli Defense Force, is giving up white phosphorus. Wait a minute. The IDF never used white phosphorus during CAS lead, so how exactly do you give up something you never had? Well, chemical weapons are something the Syrians use. No. So this is the hypocrisy of the entire Middle Eastern Zionist insanity that we deal with,
and participate in.
And you know, it's just a sick, sick world. And Zionism is a sick, sick system. Okay. It says, Well, the army did remember that it had been confused and did use white phosphorus, but only in open territories and not against people.
Yeah, right.
Okay. Then the IDF remembered that it got wrong again and that it did use white phosphorus in urban areas. Oh, my God, in 200 bombs, actually. But this is only in order to create a smoke screen. And there is nothing wrong with that. And if there was something wrong with it, insignificant and unintentional, then it would be thoroughly investigated, so that no stone is left unturned. That is all well and good, except that at least 12 Gazians met their horrific death this way, burned to death by white phosphorus. Among them were 3 women, 6 children, and a 15-month-old girl, a baby girl. Dozens more suffered burns from the material, which continued to burn through flesh and tissue until it reaches the bone. And doctors in Gaza were helpless in treating the unfamiliar burns. Israel didn't give them the time to prepare themselves. The white phosphorus shells hit Al-Quds Hospital and completely burned the top two floors. These facts were already known in the last first days of CAST lead. Human Rights Watch published a thorough investigation, one of the most thorough I have read, of Israel's use of white phosphorus and its devastating effects. IDF soldiers who took part in the Gaza campaign also testified on the extensive use of white phosphorus, including direct fire on houses suspected of being booby-trapped and not for masking purposes, as the IDF later claimed. And indeed, the outcome didn't photograph well, and that's the reason the IDF is parting ways with white phosphorus. Not, God forbid, the hell that Gada Ubtu Alima went through from the moment she was burned by white phosphorus and lost five family members, but until her death 2.5 agonizing months later. Gada managed to give her testimony and to have her photo taken, which didn't look good, and burden Israeli Hasbara, as the Mariv reporter put it. The lessons of CAST lead, and more accurately, the lessons of the Goldstone Committee, were already partly implemented during the Operation Pillar of Cloud. The smoke that rose over Gaza 5 months ago wasn't like phosphorus, but the goal was the same. Masking so nothing is seen or photographed. It worked well with the Israeli media, which anyway doesn't take much interest in Gaza, in war and in peace. So there is no danger that things look bad. It doesn't look as well with the foreign reporters, of course, and despite the fact that because of the message the IDF sent them when its bombs knowingly targeted a press building in Gaza, thus the gap continued to grow between Israeli self-perception and its imagined in its image in the world. Right? And right now, someone is sitting at a drawing desk and Rafael, or Ibit, Israeli arms manufacturer, is trying to figure out how to invent the next magic weapon, the one that removes the idea of freedom from Gazans' minds and at the same time photographs well. The development plan that already been approved, the budget is on its way and the pilot is only a matter of time. In the weapons lab called Gaza, testing is part of the battle. Yet this weapon will fail too, as will one that comes after it. As long as we have eyes, nothing that Israel does in Gaza will photograph well. You hear that over at Rafael. However, or maybe you should simply cut to the heart of the problem. Right-wing groups like Tizru, suddenly get it, deal with those who can see. That stuff doesn't make much sense, but, you know, they're using white phosphorus in Gaza. You know, it's really sick.
Yeah.
I think this is sick. So, we've got about 10 minutes left. Let's see if we've got anything else exciting here that we might be able to read. Here you are. Want to read this?
Let's go to the full article.
The stress, the modern poison that is making us fat, bald, crazy, and extremely unhealthy. I like that. I love to read the article on stress. What do you think?
Let's see where it is.
My natural news.
I'm in the instant audio.
I wish. Oh. No such luck.
The term stress is tossed around freely in this modern age and has become a casual buzzword for just about any predicaments that we find unpleasant. Yet how it is truly affects health and well-being in substantial ways is rarely acknowledged. Linked with a reign of degenerative diseases from cancer to diabetes to stroke, stress is a silent poison, sapping us of vitality and oftentimes spirit. Weight gain, mental illness, hair loss are common indicators of a lifetime filled with too much stress. Taming this unruly, beast should be top priority for anyone who values solid mental, physical, and emotional health. Three stress hormones that wreak havoc on the body. When we stress, the body pumps out three hormones, adrenaline, noradrenaline, and cortisol. Each is produced by the adrenal glands, and all three trigger a sequence of depressed neurotransmitter activity, endocrine system breakdown, poor immunity, and sluggish digestion. These hormones also influence the body's response to stress. If we feel the urge to fight, the perceived danger, aggression, irritability, rage, and violence will be displayed. A fight flight will trigger avoidance, mental confusion, withdrawal, and fatigue. And fright will lead to states of anxiety, apprehension, depression, and panic. Mood swings, obsessive compulsive, and bipolar disorders are aggravated by stress-induced hormonal imbalances as well. These hormones also cause hair loss and fat accumulation, especially in the abdominal region.
Connection between insulin resistance and stress. As the incidence of chronic stress becomes more frequent, so does insulin resistance. When we are constantly in a state of threat or emergency, the body releases glucose to provide fuel for flight or fight or flight actions. Unfortunately, it isn't truly needed, so the pancreas creates a surge of insulin to deal with the onslaught of glucose. Overall, this cycle exhausts the pancreas and creates insulin-resistant cells. Ultimately, more stress is placed on the body, which perpetuates the pattern. Tiredness, fatigue, and exhaustion set in. When the glucose metabolism becomes inefficient, other organs like the brain, liver, adrenals, thyroid, and gut begin to malfunction due to this insufficient fuel. This development of disease follows, including high blood pressure, arthritis, kidney failure, neurological problems, and ulcers. With such a slew of health issues rooted in an overstressed system, balancing the body to break this harmful cycle is extremely important for well-being.
Beyond lifestyle changes to minimize stress, such as yoga, tai chi, and breathing exercises, several supplements are helpful to properly align the hormonal system and reduce the occurrence of disease. Progesterone encourages the production of dopamine, a feel-good neurotransmitter linked with positive mood, motivation, and normal sexual response. Potent antioxidant and anti-inflammatory characteristics. It prevents water retention, which reduces blood pressure, balances estrogen and testosterone hormones.
Vitamin D depletes the vitamin sufficient significantly and maintains proper blood pressure, strong antioxidant properties.
Glycine and GABA, two important calming neurotransmitters.
Tyrosine, diminished by stress, a precursor to dopamine, hinders inflammation.
Zinc and chromium are important for balanced glucose levels.
And B vitamin complex calms the nervous system while providing energy.
Inositol helps to decrease insulin resistance, soothes depression, mood swings, anxiety, bipolar disorder, also prevents stress-related hair loss. Additionally, the herbs lemon balm, valerian root, passion flower, and St. John's wort, along with amino acid L-theanine, show promise in reducing stress as well.
Yeah, it's a source for this article. I don't know, quite a few. So, anyway, this is what happens when you
get overstressed.
You know, you freak out. top three most dangerous pain medications.
Well, that's kind of dangerous.
Yeah. Top three most dangerous pain medications.
Xanax, I bet it's one.
Well, pain medications and the adverse drug reactions to them are the fourth leading cause of death in the U.S. Well, this is only behind cancer, heart disease, and strokes. But still, millions of people take some form of pain medication every single day. And prescriptions or over-the-counter, the vast majority of these people take these just don't realize the incredible dangers.
Mm.
The risks of someone you know dying directly from a side effect from pain medication is higher than the chance of dying from illegal narcotics. Diabetes, lung cancer, or auto accident. That's scary.
Yeah.
Awareness is the only way we can help people realize just how dangerous these drugs really are. The information could save your life. The top three most painful medications.
The third most painful are opiate pain medications. Some of the most common opiate-based prescription drugs are codeine, morphine, hydrocodone, Vicodin, and oxycodone. These drugs are commonly prescribed after surgery, major accidents, severe injuries, or painful medical conditions. These drugs may numb the pain at an extremely high price. The number of overdose deaths is now greater than those deaths from heroin and cocaine combined, and over 15,000 people die annually from opiate pain medication overdoses.
That's hard to believe, isn't it?
Wow.
Now, NASIDS, N-A-S-I-D-S.
NASIDS.
Yeah, you have heard the name before. Ibuprofen, which is Advil, Naproxen, which is Aleve, and Motrin. There are others, researchers from Denmark show that patients with a history of prior heart attack that took NSAIDs, even in the short term, had a greater risk of death or other heart attack. Wow. Legions of other studies have been done on NSAIDs, and they too report an increase in the rate of death and heart attack. NSAIDs cause over 16,000 deaths per year. That's as much as AIDS. Holy cow. And Cox, this
Cox
is the number
two
one.
Inhibitors.
To Cox-2 inhibitors. Celebrex is a type of non-steroidal inflammatory drug.
Anti-inflammatory.
Known as Cox-2 inhibitor. Celebrex is commonly used to treat several conditions related to pain and inflammation. What is deeply concerning is that Celebrex is the only selective COX-2 inhibitor left on the market, as its close cousins were all pulled due to either their killing tens of thousands of people or to their unacceptable high heart risks.
Oh.
While studies in the drug potential as an anti-cancer drug, the National Cancer Institute discovered that those taking 400 milligrams of doses of Celebrex had a 250% chance greater of dying from a heart attack or stroke, and those taking 800 milligrams had a 340% higher risk. I don't know what the hell that means, but, don't take this stuff, guys. Stay away from Celebrex.
Yeah, scary.
The bottom line, it cannot be stressed enough. Pain pills are dangerous. Tens of thousands of people die every year from complications related to pain medications. Be very careful what you put in your body. Do your research so you or one of your family members are not the next victim of these deadly drugs.
Yeah,
so there you go, folks.
I'd be very scared of any of them.
Yeah, I looked into a lot of these, and it's just like...
Because Leo has some pain in his feet.
Yeah, but it's like, you got to be very, very careful what you use. And everything has major side effects.
And addictive quality.
Yeah.
Which is very dangerous. But we've come right to the end of our show, and we hope you folks at home don't have to take any of those medications and aren't in pain.
Right. And we hope that if you're a worker, you can celebrate Worker Day.
For what what's left of it.
Yeah,
I hope you're not working overtime.
And paid under minimum wage or paid minimum wage. But if you are, well, brighter days are ahead, we hope. So thanks, everybody, for joining us. And
Leo will talk to you tomorrow if you wish to tune in. Good night, folks, and have a great evening.
Good night, everybody.
Thanks for being with us.